St. Paul's words are beautiful, encouraging, and challenging. Let's hear them again. My brothers and sisters, if there's any encouragement in Christ, any solace in love, any participation in the Spirit, any compassion and mercy, do you hear those words? They're beautiful words. Solace, consolation, participation, encouragement. These are the words he uses. He has a sense of God's presence in his life that gives him this new motivation, this new energy. Where does it come from? That's the second part. And he continues. Then be of one mind and heart. Do not seek vainglory or selfishness, but humbly regard yourself as less than others so you can regard others as greater. Those are harsh words. They're challenging to us. What he's basically saying is that by him encountering Christ, he wants to have other people encounter Christ. He realizes the power of God in his life so much that he wants to diminish himself so that others can be greater. That's a big, big challenge. Humble ourselves enough that we regard others as greater than ourselves. But what does this look like? We really have an example. Well, yeah, we have an example. It's Jesus. He's kind of a tough example, though. So I'm going to use him as an example of how he understood everyone around him, sought for their salvation, and got a sense of how to work with each individual person. So Jesus is walking along, and some Romans come up to Peter, not Jesus, Peter, and ask him, "Does your master pay the temple tax?" Interesting question. Is he above everyone else where he doesn't have to pay the tax, or will he pay the tax as well? So Peter, standing there, Jesus answers, and he gives them a little cryptic question, because here he could have done many different things. That's the big challenge. Jesus could have easily just paid the tax and moved on, like, this isn't important, let's figure it out. He could have just said, "No, I'm not paying the tax. Only foreigners pay the tax. I'm not a foreigner. I shouldn't have to pay the tax." Or he could have made this whole big thing about how God is greater than everything else, and therefore he's above the law. I'm not paying the tax. He doesn't. He starts a little dialogue. In the dialogue, he makes a point about who is subject to law and all these different things. Then, to make an even further point about everything that's going on, he tells Peter to go fishing. Yeah, this gets weirder. He says, "Drop a hook in the water, and the first fish you catch will be what we need." And so, Peter drops a hook in the water, and out pops his fish with a coin in its mouth. Now, I've been fishing for many years. I've caught lots of fish. I've never caught a fish with a coin in its mouth. Neither have I caught a fish with so much money in its mouth that it'd pay my taxes, which would be super awesome if you think about it. But nevertheless, see how ridiculous the situation is. Here is a wonderful example of what Jesus does. He understands the issues of the Romans, he understands the issues of the time, and he understands his Father's providence. All of them come together. He treats the people who ask for the tax with respect, he treats Peter with respect, and he knows that his Father will provide all the things he needs to do what's right in this situation, so that he can move on to bigger and more important things instead of paying the temple tax. So Jesus is walking along. He comes to his hometown of Capernaum, and he goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath. Not a surprise, he does that every Sabbath, not a big deal. So here he is in his hometown. He's been preaching for maybe a year at this point. Everyone has heard of him. They know him as this renowned rabbi who's preached all over the place, and he's done all these great things. Of course they want him to preach. So he goes to the synagogue on the Sabbath, and they ask him to read the scroll and to preach. So he does. He preaches one sentence. Here is this renowned preacher who's been everywhere, and he preaches one sentence. How do you think they'd react? They're astounded. They're amazed. What a great message. He speaks a truth to them that they wanted to hear. Today this passage has been fulfilled in your hearing. That's what they've been waiting for. They're excited. But then they start to think, wait a minute, how can he say that? That's not who we know him to be. This isn't right. So they get upset. So now he speaks again, a new truth that challenges them. Do you really know what's going on? A prophet is not accepted in his own native place. And he quotes these examples about how the prophets of God did not even minister to Israelites, making them furious at him. So he goes from a moment of encounter where they get a sense of what God is doing. Then they flip it because it's not the way they want it, and he flips it again, making them mad, so they run him out of town and try and throw him off a cliff. If I was in a mob and we're all in a mob chasing after one person, I'm sure we'd notice where that person goes. You know what I mean? If you're in a mob, you are watching that one person you're trying to tackle as much as possible. And yet Jesus slips from their midst and walks away. This shows the incredible incredible providence of God. Jesus knows this is not the end. He has spoken truth to them. He's guided them into a new experience of God, and God provides for him by letting him slip away from the crowd and leave unharmed. Last example. Jesus is in a town, and these rabbis come up to him, having caught this woman in adultery, which asks a lot of questions the more you think about it. How'd they find out, first of all? Second of all, we're missing another person here. Takes two to tango, if you know what I mean. And Jewish law makes it very clear that both should be stoned, not just one. So already an injustice has been done. Jesus sees them coming. He could have done any number of things. He could have been like, "You're forgiven, go away," angering the rabbis. He could have picked up a stone and stoned her. It's in his power. But he doesn't do either of those. He does something very different. In one sentence, he speaks to everyone. The rabbis, the woman, the crowd gathered, the people excited to stone this woman and kick her out of the town. All these people are gathered, and he speaks one line. "But he who is without sin cast the first stone." They could have done any number of things. They could have picked up stones and started stoning her, being like, "I'm good, let's do this." But they don't. Each person reflects individually on where they're at. Jesus doesn't start listing the sins of each person, which would be really kind of hilarious when you think about it, and terrifying. Each person's sins are made known one at a time? Yeah, but no. He's trying to call them to conversion, each and every person there, that they come to understand the law, they come to understand who he is, and what's more valuable. And one by one, they all leave, knowing they're not worthy to be there. Finally, he's left alone with the woman. And he says, "Has anyone accused you?" "No." "Then you're free. Sin no more." See that in each of these situations, Jesus is able to meet each and every person, recognize where they're at, even though it looks like he's defacing himself. In each situation, it looks like he's not following law or protocol or society and all these things. That doesn't matter. The salvation of each person matters. That's our challenge too. When we hear St. Paul's words today, they challenge us on several levels. The first and most prominent one is to really put God first. So often, we don't live the joy that St. Paul is talking about, the joy that comes with that consolation of the Spirit, the encouragement from Christ, the participation of the Spirit, these things that bring us great joy. And the reason is very simple, because we make our lives all about us. I have to do everything. I have to get everything done. I have to make everything provided for. I have to make sure all the things are finished. We have so much pressure put on ourselves to make everything happen that we leave every situation frustrated and anxious. But really, that's not where we want to be. True consolation comes when we realize that God provides for us. He's got this. Imagine what that means for us. I am no longer the center of my universe. I don't have to figure everything out. It'll figure itself out. And frankly, I can't. There's so many things I can't deal with. There's not in my power. So that's the freedom that comes in St. Paul's words, the freedom he experienced. He made a point. He is not the center of the universe. God is, and God will make things work. From there comes the second part of it. Now recognizing that God is the center, that everything comes from him, he has a new desire for people. It's not so much about what my image should be or what I think I should be or how much I need. I desire the good of the person in front of me. Think of it this way. When we're kids, how much did we like getting gifts? It was awesome. Yeah, you like getting gifts? You know what I mean. Gifts were fun as kids. We got a new toy, something to play with, people cared about us. As we get older, however, it's less important. We care less and less about getting gifts and care more about giving gifts because there's a new joy in that. There's a joy in finding some special thing to give someone. There's a joy in watching someone's face light up when they get something special. There's a joy in treating people with such dignity that we show that we care about them. This is what's fun for us. This is what St. Paul's talking about. When we leave ourselves behind a little bit and start to focus on other people and enjoy bringing them up, enjoy helping them, enjoy giving our lives to them, it brings us joy. It brings us a new consolation. It brings us the joys of the Spirit. This is what we want. So my brothers and sisters, let St. Paul challenge you. He challenges you because he calls out something we already want. We want that joy. We want that consolation. We want the Spirit. We want solace. These things we desire, and he tells us how to get them. Let God take first place. We don't have to be the center of our universe. There's so many things we can't handle. Let God handle them. And it's not about us in the end anyways. We find so much more joy when we get to reach out to people, when we get to give ourselves for their sake, Nor even allow ourselves to be diminished, to build other people up. This is our joy. Reflect on this so that you may experience that same joy and come to know what St. Paul is talking about the joy that God brings us through his Spirit.